Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
I'm Ari Mejia, producer for Reset with Sasha Ann Simons. Here's a question you probably don't hear every day. Should the government be paying people to have more babies? The Trump administration thinks the answer is yes. The president has suggested things like a $5,000 bonus for new moms and even a national award for women who have six or more kids. This is all part of a bigger effort to boost the country's falling birth rate. But critics say these kinds of perks miss the point and don't address the reason people are having fewer kids in the first place. Today on Reset, Sasha and our guests dug into this so-called baby boom push and where we've seen these kinds of pro-natalist policies historically to better understand what this means for us today. She chatted with Peggy O'Donnell Heffington, author of Without Children, The Long History of Not Being a Mother. She's a history professor at the University of Chicago. We also invited listeners to join the conversation. So you'll hear what policies listeners would like to see from the federal government to support families. Sasha began by asking Peggy what her initial reaction to these proposals has been.
My first reaction was a little bit of humor. Some of the policies floated that you didn't mention include, you know, menstrual classes to teach women about their menstrual cycles. So the idea that we're having fewer kids because we were sort of confused about how to do it, I got a good laugh out of that one. But in general, I think that these policy suggestions are sort of mismatched from the really complex reasons why people are not having children. So, you know, people do cite cost, but a $5,000 baby bonus, I mean, it doesn't even touch the cost of having children.
Yeah.
The out-of-pocket cost for a hospital delivery on average for someone with employer health insurance is $3,000. So, you know, that $5,000 gets eaten up really, really quickly.
Yeah.
So I just think, you know, in some ways they're missing the point a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at the name of the award. It's a National Medal of Motherhood. These are government-funded programs that you were alluding to there to educate women about their menstrual cycles. That was all part of the proposal. Going back in time, have we seen this before? Something like this?
Sure, we have. I mean, a term that's getting thrown around in this conversation a lot is pronatalism.
Yes.
That term is from the 1970s, but efforts to try and encourage people to have more children are, of course, much older than that.
Yeah. And give us a definition, if you will.
Sure. Pronatalism is sort of it's often, you know, synonymous with pro-birth. It's this idea that on a state level, people want to encourage fertility. We want, you know, it's a state saying we want people to have more babies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can go back to Nazi Germany was a pronatalist country. The U.S. in the 19th century was really trying to encourage people to have kids. Mm-hmm. The Soviet Union. We can go back to ancient Rome. They wanted more Romans. So this is not the
first time we've seen this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
You mentioned costs, the many, many costs as a mother. I was, you know, shaking my head and agreeing with you there. The many costs that come with parenting. Why is there a falling birth rate? I feel like that's among the reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. In survey after survey, young people tell us why they're not having kids or why they're having fewer kids than in the past. And they give a range of reasons, but, you know, over and over again, they say that, you know, it has to do with money. It's about cost. Like I said, just the out-of-pocket costs of a hospital delivery are
that's a
high.
Lot.
But childcare, I mean, the national average is $12,000 a year. And I think some of our Chicago listeners are probably thinking that sounds great, right? it can run $2,000 a month per kid. People also cite the demands of their jobs. You know, no paid parental leave, no mm-hmm. time off, no time to spend with sick kids, and just a general lack of support.
Yeah.
That, you know, we parents are sort of out there on their own. And I think it's quite notable that, you know, none of these policies are really touching those reasons.
Right. Yeah. This conversation is bringing me back to when we first chatted about your book, Without Children. And so I'm curious to hear from you, your opinion. Is a falling birth rate actually a problem?
So I get asked this question a lot, and I
especially now.
Yeah. For one thing, I sort of cop out to the economists a little bit, that they're the right ones to answer that question. But absolutely, I mean, these policies are being framed around population concerns, that if we don't correct our falling birth rate, we're going to have an aging population. We're not going to have enough people to keep the economy going in the future. Mm-hmm. And there are countries that have lower fertility rates than ours, like in East Asia, Japan, and South Korea, where this is very much being experienced as a crisis right now, where, you know, fertility is less than one child per woman. The situation is far more dire in those countries, and they're certainly experiencing it as a problem.
You know, Peggy, we're seeing a lot of xenophobia in the rhetoric that comes from the Trump administration. And of course, we're dealing with, you know, from day one in January, mass deportations, the closing of borders, partially from Trump 1.0, now in 2.0. It begs the question, when you see policies like this one with regard to children, who are they aimed at?
Well, I think it's a great question. I mean, I cited countries in East Asia that are having population crises. The U.S. has the unique and, I think, privileged position of having a large number of young people who want to come to this country, who want to raise their families in this country, bring their children here. And that's everyone from migrants at the southern border to college students who want to come and, you know, get an education and stay here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's quite telling that this administration is framing concerns around population and is sort of expressing grave concerns about what our economy is going to look like in the future as it is actively preventing young people from coming to this country and deporting people from this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, as they're talking about today, sort of trying to eliminate birthright citizenship, which would very literally reduce the number of Americans born.
Right.
So I think you're right to point out that if we take those two things together, it's not just about overall population numbers. It's mm-hmm. about what kind of babies are being born. I think it's about the future racial and ethnic composition of the country.
And again, I'm still hung up on these incentives,
yeah.
Peggy. A $5,000 postpartum baby bonus for new moms. You mentioned earlier when we talked about all three of them that they don't even get to the root yeah. of the issue. As a mom, $5,000, it's laughable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are they, like, where is this coming from?
I mean, I think you're right to point
are
that out.
Are they crunching any numbers at all?
I am not in those rooms. I wish I could be. I would love to be in those rooms.
I need answers.
But it's a real disconnect from
yeah.
the actual realities families are facing. And I also think that it's revealing that these policies are not about subsidizing daycare. They're not about paid parental leave. I think that suggests that it's not just about encouraging people to have more babies, but it's about a vision of what a family looks like,
yes.
where, you know, the mother is at home, where daycare isn't something that you're paying for. So it's...
And that's not a reality.
Right. It's just
that's
not a
reality
for
many,
Americans.
Most, right, most American families. So talk more about that. You're starting to list what actual support for parents would look like.
Sure.
You know, so you mentioned paid parental leave there. What else as far as postpartum support?
I mean, we can look to there are countries in Europe that we often look to that have really robust supports for parents. Extended paid parental leave, not just maternity leave, but for fathers as well. Where they have postpartum support for those early days when no one is sleeping. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have someone come and help you. Prenatal and postnatal care, health care that is available to everyone, and then subsidized daycare. And all of those things make it more possible for
yes.
people to have children. And also, you know, I think make the lives of parents a lot better.
Yes. Access to early childhood education
Absolutely.
Programs like Head Start.
Absolutely.
Which we had yeah. just talked about on this program. That's also under threat.
On the
future.
On the chopping block.
Yeah. Let's hear from Kelly in Edgewater. Hey, Kelly. What are your thoughts?
Hey. It seems to me that if the Trump administration wants women to have more children, they should treat motherhood as a form of national service and pay us the way they pay members of the military. Mm. And then when we've retired from motherhood, we would get GI Bill benefits and lifetime health care for ourselves and our children. I mean, let's get real about this.
Yes.
If that's what they want, they should pay for it. Now, what they really want, of course, is more white babies. And that's not something that they're willing to say out loud.
Yeah.
But they certainly wouldn't be willing to pay Black women or Latino women to have babies and stay at home, mm-hmm. because then they would call them welfare queens.
Yeah. I am so glad you were able to say it out loud, though, Kelly. Thank you so much for calling. You're nodding. I was nodding as well in studio, Peggy. She's got a point.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The thing about the medal for mothers, there are historical precedents that are not great to that for that medal, like Nazi,
really?
Nazi Germany in 1933, Adolf Hitler inaugurated a medal that they called the Cross of Honor of the German Mother, which was given to women who had six or more children. And of course, of the 3 million German women who received this medal, none of them were Jewish.
Oh my goodness.
So there was a racial component there as well. But you know, aside from the historical precedents, which are not great, I would point out to the caller's point that we already do valorize mothers in really superficial ways. Like, if you went to the greeting card aisle a couple of weeks ago, you mm-hmm. would find, you know, cards that talked about it being the hardest job in the world.
Yes.
And then we don't provide mothers with any material support, like the caller is suggesting.
What a great point.
So
I got one of those cards.
And so giving mothers a medal on top of that doesn't solve the problem of support.
Mm-hmm. Well, to your point a moment ago, let's hear from Diane in Rolling Meadows. Hey, Diane.
Hi.
Hi there. What are your thoughts on this conversation?
I have had a neighbor. She passed away recently. She was from Austria, and she showed me an old black and white photo. She was from a family of 11. She was the youngest. And she proudly showed me this family photo, and her mother was in the middle. And she said, "You see that medal around her neck?" She was so proud of it. She said, "She got that from Hitler." She said, "He was giving medals to anyone who had..." I thought she said more than 10 children, but she said she met Hitler and she got this medal because she had more than 10 children.
Wow.
And she said Hitler was a good guy. Well, you know, that's how they grew up. Obviously, that's what she believed. But her mother did get one of those medals for having a large family.
For having a lot of 10 kids in Nazi Germany. Wow. Thank you for sharing that story, Diane. Interesting stuff, isn't it? We got a couple of phoners that were a little shy to jump on air. First, Ethel in Arlington Heights wanted to share this message. She said, "Let the immigrants and their children stay. That would solve the birthright and economy concerns." And we also lost Bob in Noble Square. But Bob said, "One policy Congress could consider to encourage more people to have children is climate change policy. Many people see the climate crisis as a major concern, and it makes them worry about the future for any potential children." I can't tell you how many times I hear that one, Peggy. I'm sure you do, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are both great points. Aside from material concerns and support concerns and their jobs, the thing that young people say is that it is environmental concerns that are preventing them from having children. And certainly none of these policies are about how we are going to sort of prevent the continued degradation of the environment, which might sort of make people feel more comfortable about having a child.
I mean, this feels like an issue related all around to reproductive justice, just that overall right for anyone to have or not have children.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the term reproductive justice was sort of developed, I think, in the 1990s by feminists of color who thought that the advocacy for reproductive rights, which boiled down to basically abortion, were not, you know, expansive enough to encompass what women should really be asking for. It mm-hmm. wasn't just about the right to not have a child. Reproductive justice advocates believe that, you know, it's about the right to not have a child, to have a child, and to raise that child under material conditions that meet their needs. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that last piece where we could really do a lot of work.
Yes. Let's jump back to the phone lines. We've got Maureen in Beverly. Hey, Maureen, what are your thoughts on this?
Hi.
You know, I was wondering if the professor wouldn't mind sharing with us some of her knowledge of countries, say England and the Scandinavian countries or other European countries that have addressed this issue for some years now by guaranteeing that you can go back to your same job after, say, 6 months of leave at full pay, you know, some very generous types of benefits.
Yeah, great question, Maureen.
Yeah. Peggy? I mean, when we talk about policies that will support parents, we're always, there are usual suspects in sort of Northern and Western Europe that mm-hmm. we point to that really do have supportive policies, like, you know, year plus maternity leave, guarantees about returning to your job, as the caller said, night nurses, postpartum support, pelvic floor physical therapy. I mean, stuff that insurance doesn't even cover here, and it's sort of provided by the government, as well as subsidized childcare and all of that. And I think, you know, in terms of actually reversing a falling fertility rate, these policies don't seem like they've had much effect. Mm. France's fertility rate is 1.8. Ours is 1.7. In Sweden, it's 1.5, actually lower than the United States.
Really?
So I mean, in terms of supportive policies for parents, I don't know that we have a lot of evidence that they actually move the needle on increasing fertility. But what we do know is that they massively increase the happiness of parents. French and Scandinavian parents report being significantly happier than American parents.
Interesting.
So, you know, in some ways, I think it's asking the wrong question to say, you know, what are policies that will raise the birth rate? I don't know that we have a lot of evidence for what those would be.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of evidence for the things that will make parenting a happier
endeavor. We're too busy being stressed over here to be happy.
Exactly.
We got another caller, who's Jerry from Glen Ellen. He left a comment. He said, if they want more people to have kids to do the jobs and be part of the taxable workforce in the future, well, with the future of AI, how many jobs will there even be? Oh, Jerry.
as a, you know, a humanities professor, I feel this very deeply. it may be that thinking becomes obsolete in the future.
Wow. Eric is standing by in Rogers Park. Hey, Eric. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I think what this policy does is show the big difference between the political parties and how the Republicans are always thinking about the short term, whereas I think Democrats are trying to solve systemic issues that help create long-term success. For example, education is expensive, healthcare is expensive, and we're not seeing anything out of Trump's administration to try to solve those issues. So $5,000 is such a short-term band-aid that really doesn't solve anything. So I think that's one of the big issues with the administration in general, is they aren't thinking long term, and the Republican Party in general, they don't think long term. They don't think about supporting these people from the bottom up, just about these quick fixes that are inexpensive and not really effective.
You said it, Eric. Band-aid, right? That's like, what, 3 months of childcare?
Right.
Is there ever a time, Peggy, when the government should have a say in reproductive choice?
I mean, personally, I don't think so. I mean, yeah. I think I very much subscribe to the reproductive justice framework of, you know, people should be free to have children and not have children and then raise those children.
Your decision.
Yeah.
Well, leave us with this. What are your hopes then, looking forward, you know, for the Trump administration when it comes to reproductive rights?
So I think one of the opportunities that arises is that at least we are having this conversation, even if the policy proposals are maybe mismatched with the causes that people are not having kids, even if they're sort of asking the wrong question, at least we are having this conversation. And I think because parenting is hard in this country, and it is hard because mm-hmm. of policy decisions and lack of policies. And so I think, you know, it provides an opportunity for us to say, you know, $5,000 is not what we need, but what we do need is paid parental leave. What we do need is ways for childcare to become less expensive. What we do need is material support.
Yeah. Special thank you to all the listeners who phoned in with your great questions and comments. We certainly appreciate engaging with you. We've been talking with Peggy O'Donnell Heffington, who's author of Without Children, The Long History of Not Being a Mother, and a history professor at the University of Chicago. Peggy, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by me, Ari Mejia. It was edited by Dan Tucker. With the constant news in our changing world, we want to keep you in the know and connected. Make sure to subscribe to the show or visit us at WBEZ.org to learn more. I'm Aria Mejia, producer for Reset with Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks so much for listening.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.